Welcome to The Change Starts Here. I'm your host, Dustin Odom. And today we're talking about the last three behaviors of the speed of trust. These behaviors, listen first, keep commitments, and extend trust, are powerful, practical actions that can transform relationships, enhance school culture, and strengthen the foundations of trust in your communities. So let's start with listen first. Now, as you'll hear in my interview with Ashley Caranco and a few, listening may seem straightforward, but really, listening is often one of the hardest skills to master. As leaders, we're often so focused on solving problems or sharing our own ideas that we can forget simply the value of simply listening. But when we make listening a priority, we demonstrate respect and show that we value the other person's thoughts and feelings. Imagine you're a teacher sharing concerns about a new curriculum with your principal. Which response would build trust? A quick solution or a moment where the principal pauses, leans in, and genuinely listens to understand? Listening, especially in the field of education, is an act of empathy. It tells people we care about what they're experiencing, and it makes them feel seen and heard. This act of listening first changes the dynamic of any relationship because it builds a foundation where everyone feels safe to express themselves openly. So how can we truly practice this behavior as leaders? Because if I'm honest, it's really hard sometimes. Here are a couple of practical steps. And again, my interview with Ashley Caranco later goes in deeper. But first, we have to create a space to listen without interrupting. My wife will tell you I am terrible at that. I get so excited as I'm listening that we go down 200 rabbit trails, and it's something that can drive her nuts. So it's something I have to work on greatly because I get so excited about every shiny object, every squirrel that I come across. So first, create a space to listen without interrupting. Show that you're not only listening to respond, but you're also taking in the other person's perspective fully. Second, ask clarifying questions. It's not what I was just describing when I did. I ask a question that takes us off path. Clarifying questions show that you're interested and engaged in what they're saying, which obviously helps build trust. Listening first is a simple action, but its impact is profound. Now let's move on to keep commitments. We all know that trust is built on reliability. In education, where so many people rely on us, keeping commitments is crucial. Every time we follow through on a promise, whether it's showing up to a staff meeting on time, providing feedback to a teacher, or ensuring that student resources are available as promised, we reinforce our credibility. Our teams need to know that they can rely on us, especially when things get tough. Keeping commitments goes beyond just the big promises. It's about the small, everyday commitments we make and keep, especially with students. If you tell a student you'll check in with them, make sure you do. If you commit to being at a school event, show up. If something truly unavoidable prevents you from following through, communicate it. When people see you actively working to keep your commitments, even in challenging circumstances, it strengthens their trust in you. A great way to practice this behavior is by being intentional about the promises we make. As leaders, we're often eager to help, but taking on too many commitments can lead to broken promises. I don't know about you all, but that's something that I have always struggled with. I get so excited to be able to engage with somebody and try to help them that if I don't slow down and think through what I'm committing to and create a system that helps me follow through on those commitments, I leave a lot of folks hanging, and that hurts trust in a big way. So prioritize what's most important and make sure you follow through. When people know that you take your commitment seriously, they feel safe to invest their trust in you. Finally, let's talk about extend trust. Extending trust can be intimidating because it requires a level of vulnerability. We have to let go of some control. Knowing there's a chance that someone might not meet our expectations is scary. But here's the powerful thing about extending trust. When you give trust to others, they tend to rise up to meet it. It's a positive cycle. When we show people that we believe in them, it encourages them to believe in themselves. Again, I know I like to repeat things, but this is the line that I care about deeply. When we show people that we believe in them, it encourages them to believe in themselves. In schools, extending trust means empowering teachers, staff, and even students. It's allowing them the space to make decisions and take ownership. For example, you might extend trust to a teacher to design or lead a professional development session, or to a group of students to plan a community service project. In doing so, you're saying, I believe you have the capabilities, and I trust you to follow through. This is incredibly powerful because it fosters a culture of responsibility and initiative. Of course, extending trust doesn't mean being hands-off. It means setting clear expectations, providing support, then giving people the freedom to execute. When people know that they're trusted, they're more likely to take their role seriously, put in effort, and even go above and beyond. Extending trust can certainly be a risk, but the payoff is so worth it, both in terms of results and relationships. So to recap briefly, today we covered three vital behaviors that help build and maintain trust in any school or organization. The first one is listen first. Prioritize understanding to make people feel valued. Second, keep commitments. Be reliable and intentional with your promises. And finally, extend trust. Empower your team and watch them rise to the occasion. Trust is the foundation of effective leadership. And by practicing these behaviors, we're not only strengthening our own leadership, but we're creating a culture where trust becomes a shared value. When trust thrives in a school community, people feel safe, supported, and empowered to do their best work. And that's what leadership is all about. Before I close out, remember, if you want the content, check out our Speed of Trust guide in the show notes if you want to go deeper with it. But also, please stick around for an interview I have with one of my dear friends, Ashley Caranco, who's been a principal and a coach, and she's a managing coach now. So she's worked with hundreds and hundreds, if not getting to the thousand schools at this point. And we dive into these three behaviors, but more specifically, how do we apply them more practically in a school and district setting? As always, thank you for joining me on Change Starts Here. Remember, trust is built through small, consistent actions. So take what we've discussed, find ways to apply these behaviors in a daily leadership, and let's keep moving forward together. And remember that change starts here. Ash, my partner in crime, love of my life at Franklin Covey. How are you? Thank you for being here with us today.
Hey, I am good. I have been anticipating this day. I got all dressed up today. I took a shower. I'm ready.
Oh my God. That's so funny. People don't understand when you're living in the virtual world, it's like taking a shower that day. Like you're in meetings all day, every day, but the shower is like, oh yeah, I got to do that today. So thank you for doing that. We appreciate you. Yes. I'm sure your family appreciates you. All right, let's get started. You are, for the folks who don't know you, you are a key leader in our organization. And I think a little bit more importantly, my co-MC at these symposiums. And so you don't have to go into that part because we'll surprise them later. But can you share just a little bit about your role and how trust plays a role in your leadership?
Wow. So I serve as a coaching director here with Franklin Covey Education. I have the pleasure of leading the delivery team on the West Coast. Trust is vital. I mean, you know, something you said earlier is we work in a virtual world. What you don't get to do in our world is walk by somebody's cubicle, stop in a classroom, and build face-to-face body language trust. So it's all built over Zoom. And I would say there's no way I could do this job without a major focus on trust.
Yeah, well, I think something that you and I have to get good at is listening, right? It's something that it's hard sometimes because we just want to talk and dive in and solve problems. And you and I kind of joke about our penchant to dive in and before we listen. And so one of the big behaviors we want to talk about today is listening first. I guess, why is it so important that school leaders need to prioritize listening, especially given like the fast-paced environment they're in?
Wow. I mean, if my mom were here, she would say, you are given two ears and one mouth for a reason. So you are You don't have to be raised by old parent to be raised by old school parent, but it's so key, like, especially in the world, like a high functioning leader, a building leader, C-level leader, we are working on a million things all at the same time. And it's very easy to kind of just listen a little bit and then provide a solution when really people are whole. They're able to find their own solutions, the solutions within them. They just most often need a process partner. I would say you really need to say, hey, how do you want me to show up to this conversation? Like, do you need me to listen to fix it? Do you need me to listen as a process partner? Do you need me to just listen? Like, what do you need from me in this space? And that is a really good trigger for us as people working a million miles a minute to just stop and pause and see how you need to show up for a conversation.
I love that, because I find the busier I am, and back when I was with working in schools, it you're getting hit in a million different ways. And so I guess, you know, there's oftentimes, if I think about weaknesses I've had where I believed I was listening, but I was not. How do you help people recognize if they are really listening? I think pausing to think about how do you want me to show up for you is a great way to start. Is there any other way to like check yourself to make sure that you're actually listening versus shaking your head and smiling and trying to be encouraging, but actually not connecting at all?
Gosh, that's good. I think self-awareness is key. For you to be able to be a good listener, you've got to be self-aware. You got to know yourself. Like, when are you not your best self as a listener? I think a really good comparison, Dustin, is like storm surge. Like, when you're hit with the storm surge over and over again, when it's one thing after another, you know you're not going to be in your best shape to listen. Be honest with people. Like, say, hey, I can't have this conversation right now. Like, I need you to schedule some time in my calendar. Like, you have to know yourself to know whether you're really listening. I just think back to, I used to say all the time, like when I was a principal, I'd be typing on my computer and people come in, I'd say, go ahead, I'm listening. And I would see that I was typing what the people were saying instead of actually listening or working on the other thing. So if you know yourself, you would know, like, when am I able to listen to deep conversations? When do I need to pause? When do I need to say, hey, listen, this needs a different space? So I would say knowing yourself and creating a pause are two really good strategies. A third one would just be knowing the way that you show up. So I think sometimes we show up, especially when we are in certain roles, we think that we need to show up as a solution person. So that's how you show up. So that's the lens that you're listening through. If you could remove all of that and just be in the space, that is going to help you be a better listener and be a really good sign for you. So if you are conscious, when you sit down for a conversation, say like, hey, just real quick check, how am I showing up today? Am I just here present in this conversation, or am I ready to move on to the next thing? Because if so, that's going to be a barrier for you with listening.
So you have been a principal, you have been a coach for us, you have are currently overseeing lots of coaches who impact hundreds of schools across the country, maybe over 1,000 or so. Have you seen the act of listening transform relationships, or, you know, particularly within schools, right? Like, I think about this, like, someone is, you're actually coaching someone and you think the number one priority right now is just to listen. And they're like, I've got a million things I can do. I'm just going to work on listening. Have you seen that advice lead to tremendous growth? And if so, I'm curious about what example you have to share with us.
Oh my gosh. Yes. So, you know, just to go back to like our 7 habits content, when we teach habit 5, we tell people, practice this with somebody that's important to you. So take it back into your world, practice it with somebody that is a relationship that's important, and say to them transparently, I'm working on myself. I'm working on truly listening to understand before I try to be understood. And so when we have that conversation with that building leader, they just show up differently. Like, people are telling them things that they were never hearing before. The people were probably saying it all along, but they just weren't hearing it. And so I just think back to, I was coaching a school, a building leader that was towards the end of his career. And he was singularly focused on the one thing that, you know, he could really hang his hat on, kind of leaving his legacy. And so we had some executive coaching sessions, And he said at the end of those executive coaching sessions where he was working on the way that he showed up, though, the leader that he was, because people only saw him as connected to that one thing that he was hanging his hat on. At the end, he said, you know what? If I would have had these earlier, I think I would have had a lot more life in me as a leader. And I think that my school would be getting different results because they're only focused on what I'm focused on because I haven't been listening. Like I've been charging forward with my own agenda. I wasn't hearing all the other areas that we could have been focusing on together as a school team.
I love that. And that's the true nature of empowerment. And you don't think about it like that kind of empowerment. You actually don't think about it of how it could give you longer lifespan in your work. You can think about, yeah, I can get more done, but really it brings joy, intentionality, and purpose, and it gives you longevity as opposed to burnout, right?
Yep.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So the next behavior we talked about, which, you know, I've talked about before, is keeping commitments, right? And I don't know a leader, I would say it's been very rare in my experience working with principals over the last 15 years or so, where I've worked with a leader who doesn't want to keep commitments or doesn't care about keeping commitments. The challenge is always so many people, particularly in a school leader environment, district environment, let me see if I can get this right. How do you help leaders navigate the challenges of staying true to their commitments when they're juggling a million different responsibilities?
I mean, two things come to mind. One is stop taking all the monkeys. So I think doers are guilty of this. Like people come to us with things because they know we're going to fix them. And so we take them when really it could just take 30 more seconds and you can empower somebody to fix their own problem. So just being really intentional, like, is this my thing to take? And if so, where does it go in my task system? So the number two, like, I think everybody's well-intended, but do you have a good system of getting things accomplished? Because if not, all the tasks go into like never, never land. We have some content around this, right? You can use Microsoft To Do. You can use pen and paper. Whatever it is, just use it with fidelity. Because if you're not writing your tasks down, if you're not following through, marking them off, we all love to mark things off, they're never going to get done, right? It would just be a really good idea with the best of intentions.
Yeah, I remember a mentor of mine when I was probably 24, 25, a big time CEO of a large company that we would all know. And he would always have a note card in his pocket, a suit pocket or a shirt pocket, whatever. And it was always, he called it my promise list, right? So he had his commitments and his stuff and like his planner. But when he's just having a conversation with just Ashley and Dustin, and I said, okay, I'll do that for you, Ashley. He would have it there. And every night before he went to bed, he would cross it off or make sure at the top of his next I promise list the next morning is taken care of. All right, Ash, as we talked about I'm feeling convicted because the I promise activity for me changed my life early on and made sure I was delivering on my promise. I feel like as we got to a virtual world, I feel convicted because I haven't used it as much. I'm wondering, in all of your time working with school leaders or district leaders, have you seen just the habit, someone focusing on keeping commitments, transform their organization and their organization's ability to get results?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Right. Of course. I think two examples kind of come to mind, like they surface for me. One just recently was shared with me, a paper and pen leader keeps a notebook. You know, when we were paper and pen world, and there are still a ton of you out there, we love you and you're amazing for keeping up with the paper. So they divide the paper in half. The half is the notes and the other half is the commitments. And just like your pocket person said, it's like before they lay their head on their pillow at night, they are making sure whatever their commitments are either scheduled into their coming days or done, right? So that would be really cool if you're a paper and pen person. Another one is people who are really good about their calendar, scheduling time. And this is something I think maybe we need to be accountability partners and work on this together because I am totally like the as life happens, the email, just like as it happens. But scheduling a time block for email, scheduling a time block for tasks, you know, I think back to when I first became a principal, we went to this time management, like you took your secretary time management training of like blocking out your lunch and how your secretary could block out your calendar and all these things. Like, how did we get away from that? Like that structure, we need the time. I think everybody has the best of intentions. It's the when. When will it happen? So whatever that looks like in your world, whether you're paper and pen or you a digital person, schedule the time for your task. If you put a calendar invite every morning from 7 to 8 for task, then go in each day and put the task that you need for that day. It will be totally helpful for you. We want to hear too, so let us know.
I don't usually like to focus on the negative, but what is the downside for folks who don't create a system immediately, who constantly make commitments but don't keep them? What world exists for them in the future if they don't get ahead of this now or don't get on top of this now?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a direct impact to your credibility. People are human and understanding and will give you grace until it's just too much. So it's going to be an impact to people coming to you, people looking to you to follow through with what you say. And then I think ultimately it leads to you feeling like an ineffective leader or an ineffective teammate because you're not pulling your weight. You're not seeing follow through on the things that you've committed to doing. So I think it's a twofold. Either way, it's a lose-lose.
Yeah, I think it's so critical. The last, this is another tough one. The last speed of trust behavior we're going to talk about is extending trust. And I mean, you know, extending trust, especially when you're a new leader or in a high pressure leadership situation, it can feel risky, right? Because you're responsible for so many moving parts. So how can educational leaders extend trust in ways that empower their teams while still maintaining accountability?
Good one. That's a tough one. I mean, I think about the cost of not, right? Kind of, we could say the cost of not doing any of these things, the cost of not having a task system, the cost of not extending trust. What's the quote? I'd rather extend trust and be let down, John Wooden, right? Every once in a while, than to mistrust and always feel like there's something missing. I think you've got to extend it. And I think sometimes we hear this funny of like, I only trust people as far as I can throw them. And I almost feel like that's a disservice, right? Like that means like, you know, there's some point of distrust, right? Like, you know, depending on how strong you are, like at some point you're going to distrust them. Like, what if we extended trust? What if we held people accountable all rolled into one? Like, what does that look like? A cadence, a regular cadence of open lines of communication and saying, hey, what can you commit to doing? And by when? Like, I'm asking you, I'm involving you, I'm extending it to you, and you have some skin in the game, right? Like, if we have regular cadences with the people that report to us, with the people that we are colleagues with, then one, you're building trust, you're getting to know them because you're getting to connect with them on a regular basis. They're getting to know you, so you're extending the trust. And then you all are working together, creating the space of accountability that's mutual, right? We have agreed to this. And so now moving forward, it'll be a quick win, a quick win, a quick win. And then you'll say, hey, here's a big project. I've been meeting with you for the past 6 months. I have full faith that you can do it. Let me know how I can support you.
Yeah. So again, extending trust, some folks take it as like, the only way I can extend trust, Ash, is say, here you go, go get it. However, in a high pressure environment, we have to have some accountability. So I like your idea of you just start with doing both. Extending trust, but having just accountability as we learn each other's working styles so that we can make sure that as we grow, you can have the most trust you want, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think I just do another plug for knowing yourself, right? Like know yourself, know where your triggers are, know where your pitfalls are, know where you tend to not extend trust, because then you can be mindful of it, right? So I know we try to like prevent repeat behaviors from happening in different situations, but everyone's different. You know, you're a different leader today than you were yesterday.
Yeah. So Ash, I've got a chance to work with you for a decade now. It's about to be symposium season. We're going to be together everywhere. I love how you build relationships. I love the immediate trust and rapport you build with people. And so my last question for you is, if you could leave our leaders who are listening with one key takeaway about trust that you've learned from your own journey, what would it be?
I don't know if we ever talked about this. I'm a sticky note reminder queen. Not really good with paper and pen, but I put sticky notes like all on my home office setup. And the question is, are you expecting you from other people? And I think that that's really the crux of trust sometimes. Like sometimes we expect more out of people than really we should, right? And did we articulate it? And I think we let ourselves down. We tend to be the only person that's let down because the other person didn't have the same expectations that we did. So my advice is really just think about it. Like, what are you expecting from other people? What are you expecting from you? And do they know what you're expecting? Like, are you clearly articulating that? It'll help everything. All of your relationships, use it at home, use it at work, use it with your spouse. Make sure they know what you're expecting. Make sure you know what they're expecting. And then your relationships will flourish.
Yeah, well, I mean this sincerely. I think, again, if anybody could spend 5 minutes around you in a room with other people, they can tell pretty quickly that you live to create trust and you just do it naturally. And so it's awesome to have you on here. You know, I will have you on here as many times as we're allowed.
Look forward to it.
Make work. And I look forward to spending the next couple of months with you on the road.
Yep. Sounds great. I'm looking forward to it. So,
all right, Ash.
Good to be with you.
All right. See ya. Bye.
See ya.
We'll be right back.